time to talk with another terrific author. He'll be appearing tomorrow night at Longfellow Books in Portland, a 7 p.m. appearance to discuss his latest book, He, John Connolly, the author of a number of books, including the Charlie Parker Mysteries, the Book of Lost Things, the Samuel Johnson novels for young adults, was the first non-American to win the U.S. Seamus Award and the first Irish writer to be awarded the Edgar by the Mystery Writers of America. John Connolly, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I love the book. It is such a wonderful read, and I'm curious to know, what was it that made you want to inhabit the life of Stan Laurel?
Well, I'd grown up with him. I guess like Americans of a certain generation, they were omnipresent on television when I was growing up. If you were on vacation, you know, if they were trying to fill the schedule on a sunny afternoon, they would put on a Laurel and Hardy film. And then a friend of mine, it turned out he'd met Stan Laurel just shortly before he died, because Stan Laurel spent the end of his life in a little apartment in Santa Monica, and he kept his name in the telephone book, so you could call him and go to meet him, and if he liked you, he would give you a hat. And I suppose I had always thought of them as figures from a black and white era, and yet he lived until 1965, until shortly before I was born. And yet he never worked after Oliver Hardy died, and that was what fascinated me. He was the man who was left behind. He was bereaved the same way that someone in a marriage is bereaved when their partner dies. And I simply couldn't and wouldn't work without him, and I thought there was something incredibly moving about that.
Yeah, and I love the fact that he even disliked doing any kind of personal appearances because he didn't look the way people remembered him.
Yeah, there was that. When they were awarded an Academy Award posthumously in the case of Oliver Hardy, and Stan Laurel pleaded illness, he wouldn't go along to the ceremony. And I think it wasn't just that he had grown older, but I think if he were to appear alone, people would always be conscious of the absence, you know, the man who should have been with him. And he didn't want people to think of them in that way. I think he didn't want to add that tone of sadness to their memories of them.
Well, it's such a fascinating book, and I think of myself as a movie buff, and yet I sat reading the book with my iPad next to me so I could search some of these people
that I
didn't know a lot about. I have a whole new appreciation, among others, for Bronco Billy Anderson from reading this book.
Yeah, even I didn't know that much about the early days of Hollywood before I started. Simply how prolific these people were, how many of them were, how many films they were making, but also how ruthless it was. You know, I was particularly struck by the Three Stooges, who would probably be very familiar to a lot of American audiences. You know, they were treated so abominably by Harry Cohn, who was the head of their studio. You know, he didn't let them pull their punches, so that if you see violence in the Three Stooges short, somebody is being hurt to the extent that Curly ended up with bleeding on his brain. And yet Harry Cohn said to them, you know, you will keep taking punches, because if you don't work, I will put you out on the street. And it was a very unforgiving environment. You had to be fairly tough to survive it. And, you know, Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy had a career that lasted pretty much 3 decades. They did very well to keep their head above the water, but a lot of people around them fell by the wayside.
Well, and it took a while for them to get together, and it took a long time for Stan Laurel to get to where he hoped he could be, and that was that pairing with the man that everyone knew as Babe that finally brought them that success. And this book to me, John, also reads very much like a love story on several levels. The love of women, lots of women, but the love that he had right until the end for Babe, and I thought of the really poignant scenes of him writing scenes and practicing scenes for the two of them in that apartment in Santa Monica years after the death of Oliver Hardy.
Yeah, I think even after Ollie died, he would still write routines for them, but he would never allow them to be performed by anyone else. And I think it was a way for him to hear that man's voice again and have him present in the room. Because as you say, between them, they clocked up 8 marriages and at least 2 to 3 mistresses. You know, we think of them as very simple men. Maybe we confuse the image on the screen with real life, but they were adult men with adult problems. And their relationship with each other outlasted so many of these marriages. It was the true romance in their lives. And I think, you know, male friendship is sometimes underestimated, particularly by women who, you know, we don't express our emotions terribly well. A lot of it appears to be on the surface. And yet, throughout their lives, in their loyalty towards each other, in the tenderness they show towards each other, particularly the tenderness that Stan Laurel shows towards Oliver Hardy when Oliver Hardy is dying, you can see that there was a real depth of emotion there. And that was one of the things that interested me, to write about that affection and friendship that men can have for each other.
We're talking with John Connolly about his wonderful new book, He. Women do not fare very well in this story, and it's not just those who become involved and then are cast aside by Laurel and Hardy, but the many that Charlie Chaplin goes through, and on and on. These were difficult times to be a woman, particularly if she happened to work in the film industry.
Oh, it was. It was immensely difficult. You know, the Me Too movement at the moment is a kind of culmination of things that began right at the beginning of Hollywood. Yeah, women were cast aside pretty readily. They were not paid as much. They were subject to violence. And, you know, if stars could get away with things because they made the studios money. And Chaplin is the great example. There is no denying Chaplin's genius. You know, at least 2 to 3 of the 10 greatest comedies ever made are Chaplin comedies. But we forget that he had a very dark side. You know, Chaplin had relationships with underage girls. You know, he got one of them pregnant and had to marry her. There's a real shadow there, and it's the difficulty we sometimes face in separating this lovely eighth line. How do we separate the dancer from the dance? You know, can we look at the art and appreciate it while knowing that some of the people involved in it behaved abominably? You know, Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy didn't. I think Stan Laurel was just a man who he needed domestic stability so he could make his strange art. And he would rather be with the wrong person than be alone. And that's a recipe for disaster. And I think that was one of the reasons why he accumulated so many marriages before he eventually found the right person to settle down with.
Chaplin is very much lurking over Stan Laurel throughout this book. And he looks at him with both awe and respect, but does not seem to like him much as a person. How much of that was a literary device for you? Because I know, at least in his public statements, Laurel tried to steer clear of much controversy.
He did. In his letters, he's very, very circumspect. But one letter came up for sale a little bit earlier this year, and it's clear that he has a certain ambivalence towards Chaplin. I mean, he hugely admired Chaplin. He thought he was a godlike genius. And he and Chaplin stayed in touch throughout Stan Laurel's life. But a lot of the traffic was from Chaplin's side. If Chaplin was feeling homesick or lonely, he would call Stan Laurel because they had the shared experience. They were both British. They had both wound together when they started out in their careers. But when Stan Laurel was in trouble, and Chaplin didn't help him. And towards the end of his life, I think Chaplin was quite envious of Stan Laurel. Chaplin was living in exile in Switzerland, essentially, having been hounded out of America by the FBI. And Stan Laurel was being rediscovered and reappreciated. And I think what Chaplin realized was that people might have admired him, but they loved Stan Laurel. You know, this train of comics, Jerry Lewis, Dick Van Dyke, the great mime artist Marcel Marceau, all made the pilgrimage to Santa Monica to visit Stan Laurel and talk to him. And I think Chaplin found a way to get revenge at the end of his life. I think he did something very unpleasant in his autobiography, which is kind of, obviously I won't say what it is, but it's one of the themes that runs through the book, the nature of Chaplin's autobiography and how it affected Stan Laurel. And I think that was a very deliberate decision on Charlie Chaplin's part to hurt Stan Laurel.
It's interesting, too, a couple of other comedy giants who play significant roles in the story. Buster Keaton, who was not a pleasant man to be around, apparently, and certainly, as many of the men did, enjoyed their liquor more than they should.
Well, that was his problem. I think Keaton's problem was just that he was an alcoholic. Stan Laurel was quite fond of him. He would often have a round, and they would play cards together. But Keaton was such an alcoholic that he once married a woman who was as much an alcoholic as he is. And when she woke up in the morning after their wedding night, she couldn't remember his name. You know, and we've all done odd things when we've had a couple of drinks on us. But waking up with a wedding ring on you and looking at the person beside you and going, "Who are you?" is pretty extreme.
Yeah.
So they were kind of colorful characters. And Stan Laurel was very close to Lou Costello, which was an odd pairing in a way, because he wouldn't really have appreciated Lou Costello's comedy, which was a bit too zany, I think, for his liking. But he liked Lou Costello as a person. And I think part of that was that they had both lost children. You know, they both lost sons in infancy. And it's strange the things that bring people together. I think they were united by a certain grief.
It's interesting, too, his view of Harold Lloyd, who, and I love the distinction that's made, and I'm not sure, I don't believe it's Stan Laurel who makes it in the book, that many of these guys were comedians. Harold Lloyd is an actor who happens to act in comedies.
Yeah, and I think that was the same true of Stan Laurel as well. And I think that was a distinction. We have to remember that the vaudeville theatre is essentially emptied into Hollywood, and anybody who could walk in a straight line without falling over potentially had a career. But a lot of these people weren't actors. They simply had some stage routines or a stage persona that they felt could transfer onto the screen. The ones who had real longevity were people like Harold Lloyd, Stan Laurel, and Chaplin. You know, Chaplin was not only a great actor, he was directing these films. He was funding them himself. You know, he was creating this extraordinary cinematic art that hadn't, in comic terms, hadn't really been seen before. So they're very distinct individuals compared to the others. The problem Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy had is that they were always employees. They never owned their product, whereas Harold Lloyd owned his own films. Chaplin owned his own films. So they became incredibly wealthy, whereas Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy were always struggling for money.
And Hal Roach had staggered their contracts, so neither of them were ever free at the same time. Hal Roach is such a fascinating character in the book, and I love this description that you have. Hal Roach has his faults, principal among them being a profound imbalance between the length of his arms and the depth of his pockets.
Well, I think that's probably true. There was a rumor that an unfair rumor that Hal Roach cheated them, and he never cheated them. He never paid them more money than he had to. So by the standards of other actors, they weren't hugely well paid. By the standards of the time, they were quite wealthy. But I think every artist makes a compromise. And the compromise Stan Laurel made for much of his career was that he would get paid a little bit less, but he would have more artistic control. And Hal Roach pretty much gave them artistic freedom as long as they stayed within the budget. He was able to do whatever he wanted. When they moved to Fox later and MGM, they got paid more money, but they had no artistic control at all. And those films are awful and get progressively worse. So, you know, you could argue he made a kind of devil's bargain for his art, but it was one that I don't think he ever really regretted.
Well, the book is so terrific to read. I loved it. It's incredibly sad at times. Stan Laurel did not have an easy life, and yet to me, I found it also uplifting. You mentioned the hats earlier, and I love the story that he kept the closet full of derby hats that he would replenish and give out to special visitors, even though his wife made fun of him for that.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, there have been a lot of dramas and films and books about miserable comedians, and these were not miserable men. You know, they endured sadness through their lives, but every life will have a little bit of it. But at the end of his life, I think there was a kind of contentment to Stan Laurel. I think he had this extraordinary life with this extraordinary man who had been by his side for so much of it, and he missed him deeply, but out of it came this really, really wonderful art. And at the end of it, sometimes when you write a book about someone you've admired, you find out things about them that make you dislike them. All I found out made me appreciate his art more. In the end, he was a kind, decent man. And I think Oliver Hardy was too. And something of that shows through in their art, I hope.
It certainly does. And I love their work for as long as I can remember. But my appreciation, not only for them, but for the whole industry and the birth of that industry is so much greater from reading this book. I feel a lot smarter about the movie business, but particularly about Stan Laurel and Babe Hardy. John Connolly, a wonderful book. Tomorrow night at Longfellow Books in Portland at 7 p.m. Thank you so much for visiting with us.
Oh, you've been a gentleman, Rich. Thank you so much for your interest.
John Connolly here on Downtown.